Chapter 12. Now Sean had a course along which to race. He was born to run, and Wade Courtney led him out of the stall in which he had fretted, and gave him his lead. Sean ran, unsure of the prize, unsure of the distance, yet he ran with joy, he ran with all his strength. Before dawn, standing with his father and Garrick in the kitchen, drinking coffee with hands cupped around the mug, Sean felt excitement for each coming day. "Sean, d'examen and duty with you, and make sure there are no strays in the thick stuff along the river." "I'll only take one herd boy, Pa. You'll need in duty at the dipping tank." "All right, then. Try and meet us back at the tank before midday. We've got to push through 1,000 head today." Sean gulped the remains of his coffee and buttoned his jacket. "I'll get going, then." A groom held his horse at the kitchen door. Sean slid his rifle into the scabbard and went up into the saddle without putting his foot into the steel. He lifted a hand and grinned at Wait. Then he swung the horse and rode across the yard. The morning was still dark and cold. Wait watched him from the doorway. "So damn sure of himself," thought Wait. Yet he had the son he had hoped for, and he was proud. "What do you want me to do, Pa?" Garrick asked beside him. "Well, there are those heifers in the sick paddock." Wait stopped. "No. You'd better come with me, Gary." Sean worked in the early morning, when the sunlight was tinted as a stage effect, all golden and gay, and the shadows were long and black. He worked in the midday sun, and sweated in the heat, in the rain, in the mist that swirled down grey and damp from the plateau, in the short African twilight, and came home in the dark. He loved every minute of it. He learnt to know cattle, not by name, for only the Trek oxen were named, but by their size and colour and markings, so that by running his eye over one of the herds, he knew which animals were missing. "Zama, the old cow with the crooked horn, where is she?" "Nkosi," no longer the diminutive "Nkosi Sana," little lord. "Nkosi, yesterday I took her to the sick paddock. She has the worm in her eye." He learned to recognize disease almost before it started, the way a beast moved and held its head. He learned the treatments for them. Screwworm, kerosene poured into the wound until the maggots fell out like a shower of rice. Ophthalmia, rinse the eye with permanganate. Anthrax and quarter evil, a bullet and a bonfire for the carcass. He delivered his first calf among the acacia trees on the bank of the Tugela. He did it alone, with his sleeves rolled up above the elbows and the soapy feel of the slime on his hands. Afterwards, while the mother licked it and it staggered at each stroke of the tongue, Sean felt a choking sensation in his throat. All this was not enough to burn up his energy. He played while he worked, practicing his horsemanship, swinging from the saddle and running beside his horse, up again and over the other side, standing on the saddle at full gallop, then opening his legs and smacking down on his backside, his feet finding the stirrups without groping. Practicing with his rifle until he could hit a running jackal at 150 paces, cutting the fox terrier-sized body in half with a heavy bullet. Then there was much of Garrick's work to do also.
"I don't feel very well, Sean."
"What's wrong?"
"My leg's sore. You know how it chafes if I ride too much."
"Why don't you go home, then?"
"Pa says I've got to fix the fence around the No. 3 dip tank."
Garrick leaned forward on his horse to rub his leg, giving a brave little smile.
"You fixed it last week," Sean protested. "Yes, but the wires sort of came loose again."
There was always a strange impermanency about any repairs that Garrick effected.
"Have you got the wire cutters?"
And Garrick produced them with alacrity from his saddlebag.
"I'll do it," said Sean. "Hell, man, thanks a lot." and then a second's hesitation. You won't tell Pa, will you?
No.
You can't help it if your leg's sore. And Garrick rode home, sneaked through to his bedroom, and escaped with Jim Hawkins into the pages of Treasure Island. From this work came a new emotion for Sean. When the rain brought the grass out in green and filled the shallow pans on the plateau with water, it was no longer simply a sign that the bird nesting season had begun and that the fishing in the Baboon Stream would improve. Now it meant they could take cattle up from the valley. It meant there would be fat on the herds they drove into the sale pens at Ladybird. It meant that another winter had ended, and again the land was rich with life and the promise of life. This new emotion extended to the cattle also. It was a strong, almost savage feeling of possession. It was in the late afternoon. Sean was sitting on his horse among the trees, looking out across the open vi-land at the small herd that was strung out before him. They were feeding, heads down, tails flicking lazily. Between Sean and the main body of cattle was a calf. It was 3 days old, still pale beige in colour and unsure of its legs. It was trying them out, running clumsy circles on the short grass. From the herd, a cow lowed, and the calf stopped dead and stood with its legs splayed awkwardly under it and its ears up. Sean grinned and picked up the reins from his horse's neck. It was time to start back for the homestead. At that moment, he saw the llama Gaia. It had already begun its stoop at the calf, dropping big and dark brown from the sky, wings cocked back and its talons reaching for the strike. The wind rustled against it with the speed of its dive. Sean sat paralyzed and watched. The eagle hit the calf, and Sean heard bone break, sharp as the snap of a dry stick. And then the calf was down in the grass, struggling feebly with the eagle crouched on top of it. For a second longer, Sean sat, dazed with the speed at which it had happened. Then hatred came on him. It came with a violence that twisted his stomach. He hit his horse with his heels, and it jumped forward. He drove it at the eagle, and as he rode, he screamed at it. A high-pitched, formless sound, an animal expression of hate. The eagle turned its head, looking at him sideways with one eye. It opened its great yellow beak and answered his scream. Then it loosed its claws from the calf and launched itself into the air. Its wings flogged heavily, and it moved low along the ground, gaining speed, lifting, drawing away from Sean. Sean pulled his rifle from its scabbard and hauled his horse back onto its haunches. He threw himself out of the saddle and levered open the breech of the rifle. The eagle was 50 yards ahead of him, rising fast now. Sean slipped a cartridge into the breech, closed it, and brought the rifle up in one continuous movement. It was a difficult shot. Moving away from him and rising, the beat of its wings jerking its body. Sean fired. The rifle jumped back into his shoulder, and the gun smoke whipped away on the wind, so he could watch the bullet connect. The eagle collapsed in the air. It burst like a pillow in a puff of feathers, and fell with its 6 feet long wings fluttering limply. Before it hit the ground, Sean was running. It was dead when he reached it, but he reversed his rifle, holding it by the muzzle. He swung the butt down from above his head onto its body. At the third blow, the butt of his rifle broke off, but he went on hitting. He was sobbing with fury. When he stopped and stood panting, the sweat was running down his face. and his body was trembling. The eagle was a squashy mess of broken flesh and feathers. The calf was still alive. The rifle was jammed. Sean knelt beside it with tears of anger burning his eyes and killed it with his hunting knife.